Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with Angelo Coniglio, the author of The Lady of the Wheel. So welcome, Angelo. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Bob.
I certainly want to talk about the book a little bit, but as I just mentioned a second ago, I'm fascinated by some of the details that you've unearthed about the abandoned, the illegitimate, foundling orphans, and all of that. But before we do that, just a little background on your family, where they're from, and what research you've done into them.
Well, I'm the youngest of nine children. My parents were born in a town in central Sicily, the town of Sede di Falco, Sede di Falco in dialect, in Caltanissetta province. And my father came to America in 1913, leaving my mother behind, expecting my eldest brother. And my mother and my eldest brother came in 1914. And they settled for a while in a coal mining town, Robertsdale, Pennsylvania. It was actually a company town. And stayed there for a few years, then moved to Buffalo, New York. They had a total of nine kids, and I'm the baby with the family.
Yeah, same with my mother's family. There were nine children in her family. So that's not unheard of back then, that's for sure.
Not unusual.
So there were a couple of your brothers and sisters were born in Italy, and then the rest of the family was born
here. My eldest brother was 23 years older than me, and he was born in Sicily. And then three were born in Pennsylvania, and the rest of us were born in Buffalo. I have a nephew that's 2 days younger than me, my eldest brother's son. So the generations are sort of mixed together in my family.
Yeah, that's in my mom's family, too, the same thing. And they came around the same time, 1915. And they actually left their oldest son in Italy, thinking they were going to go back, and they never did. So my cousins were all born there from my Uncle Giovanni.
Well, I have my mother and father were the only ones of either family to come and remain in America. I have no aunts and uncles here, no first cousins here. All my relatives, all my close relatives are my siblings, most of them deceased by now, but my siblings and their children and their children's children. My mother and father are responsible for, at last count, 145 descendants from those two people. And they're all my nephews and nieces, and I know every one of them.
That's outstanding. Yeah. And so that's very interesting. And I just met my dad's first cousins that I never knew existed. A little while ago in Italy.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
It was so amazing.
Like finding another sibling. I've gone and found my first cousins in Sicily, and it was like finding another brother and sister. Yes.
So now you've been back. You've been there, of course. Yeah.
Several times. Yes.
Yeah. I'm gushing it a little bit. I keep telling people if you go to Italy and you know where your family's from, Rome is great, and Florence is great, but you have to meet the family.
I know what you're going to say. I have so many friends who say, I went to Italy, and the one thing they say is, well, they didn't understand me when I spoke, and they didn't seem to be very friendly. And I say, well, where did you go? Well, we went to Rome and Venice. I said, where's your family from? Racconmuto, Sicily. Why didn't you go to Sicily? Well, I didn't think there was anything there. Well, they weren't friendly in Rome because you were speaking Sicilian. You might have thought you were speaking Italian, but you were speaking Sicilian. And I tell people, go to Sicily. And I tell people, especially young people, go while you're young, because once you go once, you're going to want to go again.
I know.
Unfortunately, I'm pushing 86. I don't know if I'll ever go again. So I wish
86,
I had gone 50 years ago.
You look great for 86. You're kidding me.
I'm in great shape for the shape I'm in.
You look fantastic. We were in Sheila, Calabria, and my wife said, I could live here. And I said, be careful of what you ask for.
yes.
So one of the things that I found amazing as I was going through your website and everything was the part about the wheel and all of that. So why did you do that? Why did you research all of that?
Well, the wheel is the foundling wheel, with where illegitimate children and children born out of a wedlock and unwanted children were left for a nun or a priest to find. I did it. I got into it because I was doing research for a friend. And during that research, I found that one of his ancestors was a foundling, and the person who found the abandoned child was named Rosa Esposta. Esposta in itself is a foundling name. So here was a foundling who was apparently working in the foundling home, who was reporting the birth of another foundling. That sort of struck me, and from then on I just started looking into the whole situation of abandoned children. I've done a lot of research for a lot of family and friends and relatives, and virtually every family, if you go back far enough, has a foundling. In other words, a child whose parents were not known. I have one. I think I've got a third great grandfather who was a foundling. My wife has a second great grandfather who was a foundling. Almost every family has a foundling, and so I just got into it. Then I wrote a book to put down how this happened. It's fiction, but it's all the things that happened in my book really happened to somebody. And then I guess somehow I'm now the foundling expert.
Yes, that's for sure. So now you know I was looking and you make a distinction. There's abandoned, there's illegitimate, there's foundling, and there's orphans, and they're all similar but different, yeah?
They're similar, right. An orphan is a child whose parents are known, but they're deceased. So that we say a child is orphaned. His parents got killed in a car accident. But you know who his parents are, you know what his name is, you know what their names are. And in the culture in Sicily also, orphans were very well taken care of. They were cared for by other members of the family. They were loved. They were treated well because the family knew that they had lost their parents. So that's an orphan. An illegitimate child is a child that a woman bears a child out of wedlock, either doesn't know or won't say who the father is. And so the child then takes the name of its mother, the surname of its mother, and the child is illegitimate. And then you have foundlings. A woman, and generally an unwed woman, has a child, again, secretly or unbeknownst to the public, presumably. And rather than abandoning that child in the street, there was a system that was throughout Europe and heavily in Italy and Sicily where such a woman could take a child to a church or a monastery, or sometimes even to a midwife's home, and in the side of the building, in the wall, was a little wheel like a Lazy Susan. And then she put the baby in that wheel, spun the wheel, rang the bell, and ran. So whoever was collecting the children, whether it would be a nun, a priest, or a receiver of foundlings, would find this baby, maybe some clothes on the baby, maybe a note saying, please name the baby Giovanni, but had no other information about the child, and would have to make up a name for the child. And a lot of times the name was a name like Esposto, which means exposed, mm-hmm. or Proietto, which means thrown away or cast off, Trovatello, which literally means foundling. Or often they gave these kids very stigmatic names like Melangiana, with eggplant, yeah. Gumento, which was a female, a mare, a horse. If you were a foundling, regardless of what kind of name they made up for you, your name told everybody in your town that you were a foundling. In other words, you're an illegitimate mm-hmm. child. So it was a great stigma, and generally foundlings were the lowest of the lowest class. Foundling often would marry another foundling because there was no family to support them, no family that wanted a foundling in their own family.
Really? Oh, God, that's sad. So yeah. I have to tell you, my wife and we visited there just a couple of weeks ago. Her grandfather and grandmother from Shaka, Sicily. And her mother's maiden name was Poeta, P-O-E-T-T-A. And as I was researching, I couldn't find this name anywhere. Well, I found the grandfather, and his name was Proietto.
Proietto, which means found. Literally, it means thrown away.
Yeah.
Okay, projected, thrown away. So was her grandfather a foundling, or was
I don't know. And that's why I wanted to ask you. It doesn't necessarily mean now that person was a foundling. It could have been his father or his grandfather or something.
Exactly. Once the name is given to a male child, okay, now there's somebody named Proietto. All his descendants are named Proietto. I mean, I have friends who are named Proietto, and they never knew until I told them the story that somewhere in their ancestry is a foundling. Same goes for Esposito. Esposito is the most common name in Naples, and it means the same thing. It means foundling. So, the fact that you have that name doesn't mean that you're a foundling, but it surely means that somewhere back in your male line, there was a foundling. And if you want me to do your wife's ancestry, send me an email with it. I'll see where the foundling was.
I will. I mean, I got her back. In Sicily, I want to say, I think 4 generations. I think I got her back to her, maybe even a 5th great grandfather. But I'll check. I'll send it to you because it'd be interesting. But I think that was on her grandmother's side. On her grandfather's side, I didn't get that back that far, I don't think. But I'll check and I'll let you know what I find. Now, so my next question is, you see behind me here, Piermalo Nicola, my great grandfather. He was filio naturale. He was illegitimate.
His mother was known, but not his father.
No, his father was known. His father was a noble. His father came from a noble family. Now, I have two birth records for him. I believe his real mother, his natural mother, was Maria Leone, L-E-O-N-E. However, on his birth record, there's in Naples, not everybody, but some have, there's a little card that has the parents' names on it. It shows a Maria Savino, who happens to be the mother of all his siblings. He was the oldest son. So I think somehow he was illegitimate, then his father married. I don't know if there's such a thing as an adoption at that point in time, but somehow he was able to say that his mother was Maria Savino.
Did he marry in Italy?
He did, yeah.
And did you have his marriage record?
I have, yes, his marriage record. He married twice. Both his marriage records are on his birth record. And on that record, it shows both women's names. So it's really, really confusing with him. Very confusing.
You have a margin note on it.
Margin notes. Yeah.
But do you have an actual marriage copy of the marriage?
His father was Savario Giovanni. I do not have his marriage record.
I'm talking about the foundling or the illegitimate child now. If you have his marriage record,
the marriage record would
say he was the son. It would name his parents, and if the mother was unknown or whatever, it would name him. As far as adoption goes, adoption of infants, especially illegitimate infants, was actually illegal in Italy. And this is the difference between a foundling and an orphan. Adoption of an orphan was allowed, and a lot of times there were, and generally it was an adoption of an adult orphan to give the person some heritage, and inheritance rights. But foundlings and illegitimate children were not adopted. Now, that doesn't mean to say that they didn't live with their parents or live with one of their parents and even use their parents' names. And as far as the community was concerned, everybody knew who the kid was. but officially and legally, there was no such thing as adoption. There were cases of fostering. A person could be named as a guardian of a foundling, but not as a legal parent of a foundling. But send me that stuff too. I'd like to look at that and see
And somebody told me that because it was a noble family, that you know they could get away with things that you know regular people couldn't get away with. You know, and when I was there, I found out that his father he liked to gamble and he liked women. My second great grandfather wasn't the person who inherited the title. It was his brother, his older brother.
Right.
And so while they had land and they had some property and wealth and things like that, they didn't inherit the title, but he was allowed to say he was from the Dukes of Capricota because of his father. But again, that's what somebody told me, that, you know, the nobles could get away with stuff that the normal people couldn't get away with.
No different than today. There were popes that had illegitimate children, you know.
I come from one of them.
Okay.
I descend from Paul III, direct descendant. my great-grandma, Nicholas, wife, was Amelia Quattrolo di Torcerolo, very noble family. And tracing them back, my 13th great-grandfather was Paul III.
There you go.
And it was funny because we were watching the Borgias. I don't know if you saw that movie, that series or not.
I haven't watched it.
And it was fantastic. Really, really good series.
Uh-huh.
And they're naming these people. And I'm sitting there with my wife, and I'm saying, well, that's my grandfather, and that's that person. It was very, very interesting. So now the other thing I wanted to ask you before we talk about the book, one other thing was for anybody who's Sicilian, and you mentioned dialects, and I was in Calabria, and the Calabrian dialect is nothing like Italian. And you mentioned yourself that Sicilian's not like Italian. So what do you believe the origins of Sicilian language is?
I think Sicilian is a Romance language that developed separately from other Romance languages. Calabrese or Calabrian actually is a spinoff of Sicilian. Or let me put it this way: you know, Calabria was once part of Sicily.
That's right. Yeah.
So it's really a Sicilian. Sicilian twin, I would say. Sicilian is a separate language from Italian. It's because it's similar, because it's a Romance language, Italians, Northern Italians, tend to think that Sicilian is just ignorant people that don't know how to speak proper, quote, proper Italian. And the example that I try to use is to say, well, that's like saying that people who speak Spanish are ignorant people that can't speak Italian. Because Spanish certainly is similar to Italian. It certainly sounds like Italian. And there's some words that are identical to Italian. But you'd never say that Spanish is a dialect of Italian. Same goes for Sicily. Sicily was developed separately. There's a lot of words that are identical or almost identical. But there are many, many words that simply don't exist in the Italian language. And that's why if you speak pure Sicilian to a Northern Italian, they can't understand you. There are words they just simply don't understand. Apple in Italian is mele, and in Sicilian it's puma. It's not a different pronunciation, it's a different word. And there are many examples of that. And Sicilian also got more impact from Greek and Arabic than mainland Italy did. So there's a lot of Greek and Arabic words mixed in with the Sicilian language.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I found with the Calabrese. I'm trying to learn a song that they were singing when we were there, and I asked them for the lyrics, and Gino sent them to me, and they're like nothing like I've ever seen before in my life.
Well, Calabrese and Sicilian, both of them suffer from the fact that they were not written languages.
Not often written languages.
Let's put it that way. So people write them phonetically.
Yes, exactly what I see.
If you know the phonetic rules, you can pronounce them, except that people try to apply English phonetic rules to Sicilian words. That doesn't work. But if you know the phonetic rules, you can pronounce the word. And I would say that if a Calabrian and a Sicilian spoke to each other, they would understand each other much more than they would understand somebody from the north, because their languages are similar.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
Yeah. That's a good point. So now, the lady in the wheel. When I was doing research, and I came across him quite by accident, and I don't remember how I did, but the most famous person that I've ever found that was a child from the wheel was Giovanni Martino. I don't know if you know about Giovanni Martino. He was in the 7th Cavalry with Custer. And he was an abandoned child. The other thing that I learned about that was that often the mother who abandoned the child would leave something or dress the child a certain way in case she wanted to claim the child back.
Yes, to back up a little bit, the whole idea of the wheel, okay. And I call it sanctioned abandonment. Both the civil authorities and the church authorities had reasons for, quote, sanctioned abandonment. One was, it seems kind of hypocritical to say it, but the civil authorities wanted to preserve the honor of the unwed mother, quote, unquote, and rather than having letting her bear this child and keep the child as an illegitimate child, they thought it was better for her to put the child to do the sanctioned abandonment. The church wanted it done because in the Catholic Church's view, if a child dies without being baptized, the child does not go to paradise. Okay, it's not a soul. And they were hypocritical to a certain extent as well, because it was fine for the child to be born and baptized, but after that, as I said, they were the lowest of the low, and there was a very high death rate. Anyway, so a woman would have a child out of wedlock and go to, as I said, maybe a local nunnery, a local convent, a local monastery, a church, sometimes just the home of a midwife, and there'd be a wheel in the side of the house and leave the child there. And it was up to the person that found the child to name it. In large cities, the wheel often was in a hospital. And the child was brought up in the hospital as long as it survived. Very poor health conditions. Here's another sign of hypocrisy, I think. Even though officially the mother of the child was not known, technically, in many cases, she was known. And she actually had to pay a fee to leave the child in the wheel. And sometimes if she couldn't pay the fee, she had to work in the hospital as a wet nurse. But she was not allowed to wet nurse her own child. And it just, you know, some of the things, right? So at any rate, when a mother did this and left a child in the wheel, she might leave a token, a medallion, sometimes just a slip of paper that said, you know, name the child Javon, and dress the child in whatever clothing she might have to dress him or her in, so that she could possibly later go back and say, okay, I left I left the baby in the wheel on such and such a date, and she was wearing red shoes, or she had a token of St. Christopher or something like that. That didn't happen very often, but it did happen. Another thing that didn't happen very often was for a married woman or a married couple to abandon a child. That was illegal. I mean, was not sanctioned. It was illegal. I mean, if you were unwed, okay, they sanctioned that because because of the whole stigma of the unwed mother. But if you were married, it was your responsibility to take care of the child, and it was illegal to abandon the child. And in a lot of cases, people attempted to abandon children, not just newborns, but children who had been, you know, a month or two old. And so that was illegal. But there were cases where parents could not care for a child, where, you know, things were very, very bad, especially in Sicily, who may have abandoned a child that was not born out of wedlock, but was technically really a legitimate child. And those would be the ones that might want to go back and claim the child at some later date. And so my book, The Lady of the Wheel, a little discussion about civil records of birth. Civil records of birth in Italy and Sicily are pretty detailed, and they give the name of the official, and then they give the name of the person who presents the child, which was usually the father of the child. And it says, Gaetano Coniglio presented a baby boy born of him and Rosa Alessi. I'm talking about my own parents, my own father now. Born of him and Rosa Alessi on April 26, 1889, and they gave him the name Gaetano. That's the script. But when there was when the child was left in the wheel, the script said something like Emanuela della Ria Levatrici, midwife, or Ricevitrice dei Proietti, receiver of the castoffs, or simply Rotaia. Rotaia is a word that, if you ask any Italian today what rotaia means, they either scratch their heads or they think it has something to do with the mechanical, a wheel. Rota is a wheel. Mm-hmm. But rotaia means female wheel keeper, or female person that operates a wheel. Or condense that to mean lady of the wheel. So La Rotaia is the lady of the wheel. She then would take the child, possibly find a wet nurse, and then take the child to the town hall for it to be registered. And when it was registered, if it said that the child was found in the wheel, generally it said nothing about the parents. I mean, it didn't even say parents unknown. It just didn't name any parents. And obviously, it says the child was given the name Angelo and the surname Milangiana. The given name and the surname. In a regular birth record, the child's surname is not given because it's the same as the father. My father, my grandfather Gaetano Coniglio presented the child. What did you name the child? Gaetano. They don't give the last name because it's the same as the man bringing it in. But in the case of a foundling, it specifically says that he was given the surname, the given name such and such, and the surname. And the surname, we talked about Proietto and Esposto and Esposito. Sometimes it was a stigmatic name, but sometimes it was a common Sicilian or Italian surname. But if it's a name that doesn't occur in that town, then everybody knew that child was a foundling. I mean, if there's no Coniglios in your town, and here's a kid named Joe Coniglio, well, where'd he come from? Well, he's a foundling. They gave him that name. Same goes for place names like Messina or Palermo. People think, well, you know, my grandfather, his surname was Messina. He must have been from Messina. Not necessarily. He may have been from Palermo, and they named him Messina because he wasn't from Palermo. In other words, gave him a foreign name.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's something. Yeah. That's interesting what you said about the records, because I've looked at hundreds of records, and you're right. I always assumed, well, they didn't name the last name because, yeah, the father's there. So, but correct. If the father wasn't there, they had to give them some sort of name. Right. So now the book, the book tells the stories of some of these children and what happened to them, or?
The book tells a story of a sulfur mining family. Sulfur mining was maybe a step above sharecropper in Sicily. A sulfur mining family who had several children, and the mother becomes pregnant and doesn't know, you know, it's another mouth that she's going to have to feed, and she doesn't know what to do. And she actually has the child without the husband, the father knowing about it, keeps it secret from everybody, which isn't necessarily that hard in a culture where women and men are separated, where women wear bulk clothes and so on. And she has a child, and she puts it in the wheel and leaves some identifying objects. And the child who is left in the wheel grows up or becomes a young woman, and turns out that she then becomes the lady of the wheel. She becomes the person who is collecting these other foundlings from the wheel, just like the real one that I found that got me started on this mm-hmm. story. Then it also tells something about the life of the family of a sulfur miner. He's a picked man. It tells about the Caruzzi. You know what Caruzzi
means?
In Sicily, Caruzzi means children, kids. Caruso is a little boy. Caruza is a little girl. But the name, the word Caruzzi is used to describe what I call mine boys. These were young men, young children who were taken from their families and to work in the sulfur mines. And they had to go down into the sulfur mine, and when the pick man chopped the sulfur out of the vein in the tunnel, the Caruso would pick up the sulfur and carry it out to the outside to the furnace where it could be melted down. This custom was that very young boys were used as young as 5 and 6 years old, because they could get into the mine, they could get into small places, and they were more indentured servants than workers. In fact, a very common custom was that the mine owner, or sometimes even a pick man himself, would go to a family and say, you know, you have too many mouths to feed, you have a young boy, 5, 6 years old, I'll give you the corso di morte, which translates to death benefit. I'll give you a death benefit.
Wow.
Before he dies. Okay, I'll give you whatever. I'll give you 80 lira. I'll take your son, and he'll work for me in the mine. And don't worry, if you want to pay it back, you can always have your son back. Well, first of all, it rarely happened that the family could ever afford to pay it back. They never got their son back. And so it turns out that these Caruzzi worked all their lives in the mines to the point where they became crippled and hunchback from carrying the sulfur out of the mine.
That's part of the story. What was the life expectancy for these kids?
Not much, but there were men who were, you know, in their 30s and 40s who were still called Caruzzi kids, who were still working in the mine. Yes. It's a sad story. People in Sicily today conveniently forget about it.
Well, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, you know, you don't want that as part of your heritage, I suppose.
Yeah,
so.
I'll send you. I have a web page about it. I'll send you a link to it. And my father worked in a mine. He was a pick man, but I don't know for sure. I don't know. because it was something that was not spoken about. Mm-hmm. But these kids, as I say, some of them started when they were 5 years old and lived and died working for the mine.
So that's
part of my story.
Yeah. So your father was the only one that came. Why did he come?
I think he wanted to eat. I can't tell you exactly why he wanted to come. Sulfur mining was hard. Of course, he came from a sulfur mining town and he became a coal miner in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But the times were tough. My father was the seventh son, okay? He was the youngest son. And as we spoke before, you know, the eldest son got the property or the title or whatever. Mm-hmm. The next son maybe became a priest. The next son went in the army. You know, the younger and younger the sons got, the less and less they got from their inheritance. I don't know all the details. My Uncle Giuseppe came to America in 1912, the year before my father. And when my father came, he put my uncle's name down as his destination. He was going to his brother. And they both families were in Robertsdale, Pennsylvania. My father and my uncle married two sisters. In other words, my father's wife, my mother, was the sister of my uncle's wife. So, my aunt married my uncle. Okay, so two brothers married two sisters. So now these are things I know happened, but I don't know the family stories behind why they happened. After a couple of years, my uncle and my aunt decided to move back to Sicily, and that caused a schism between him and my father. And what I think happened was, you know, my father, being the younger son, said, you know, you got me to come to America and leave my family and et cetera, and now you turned around and went back. And so they didn't speak or correspond for many years. Eventually they reconciled. But I think the whole thing may have had something to do with property, okay? That maybe the uncle had a say in the property. My father didn't. My father knew he wasn't going to get any property, and that's why he came to America. Another question that I often ask is they went to Pennsylvania. You've heard of Punxsutawney?
Where the
Punxsutawney Phil. Well,
yeah.
This Robertsdale is in western Pennsylvania, in that area. And a lot of people, when the coal mine shut down or had problems in central, in western Pennsylvania, a lot of people from my ancestral town came to Buffalo. And I could never figure out, they were a lot closer to Pittsburgh. Why didn't they go to Pittsburgh? There was industry in Pittsburgh. There were jobs in Pittsburgh. And I think that it was because of the Ku Klux Klan. The Ku Klux Klan was very active in Pennsylvania against foreigners of any kind, not just blacks, foreigners of any kind, and Catholics. And I think that my family came to Buffalo because it was not Pennsylvania. They came to Buffalo because they thought it was safer here.
Wow, that's interesting. And so now, so what did he do in Buffalo? Was there mining there too? Or, you know, outside of Buffalo?
No, there was no mining here. He worked as a general laborer for the local natural gas company. He worked as a bartender. My father was killed in a hit and run accident when I was 7 years old. So,
that's terrible.
I don't have a lot of memories of my father either. But what's interesting is when they went to Robertsdale, Pennsylvania, they lived next door to another couple from our hometown in Sicily. When he moved to Buffalo, he moved next door to the same couple who had moved to Buffalo before he did. So, and then there was a mutual aid society in Buffalo, made up of people all from the same little town in Sicily.
So now when your father passed away, well, you said you're the youngest, right? So I guess your older brothers and sisters kind of.
Right. I had the most loving family. They were each like a parent to me. They would, every one of them would spoil me rotten and give me anything I wanted to this day, because I was the baby. Yep.
Yeah. My mother was she was the youngest girl. She had one younger brother, but I know she, because my grandparents obviously didn't have a lot of money. My grandfather was an ice man in New York City, right? Carried the ice on the back.
Yep.
But I remember my mother telling her that the first, I guess, real Christmas present she got was from her older sister, who started working, I guess. She was at least 15, 16 years older than my mother. And that was the first real present that she got was from her older sister.
In my case, my eldest brother, who was 23 years older than me, Guy Gaetano, he also was my godfather. He and his wife were my godfather. They had a son, as I told you, 2 days younger than me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My brother, Felice, Phil, was my sponsor at my confirmation. They all stood up for my wedding. And like you said, it was like having five fathers and three mothers, so four mothers counting my mother. Yeah.
Well, I always say that about my uncles, that I especially my mom's family. It was like having and even you know, my aunts that were the in-laws or my uncles that were, it was like having eight sets of parents, you know.
Right, right.
And you got this. If you go on a line, you get a little.
Right. And my eldest brother's kids, he had a son, as I say, 2 days younger than me, and another son 2 years younger than me. Now, these are my they were my nephews.
Yeah.
Never in their life did they ever call me uncle. We were like brothers. I mean, we were the same age. We went fishing together. We did the same thing together that brothers would do. We were a generation apart, but that didn't matter.
Well, I was taught that apparently just in Naples, this is a thing. We always called my father's first cousins, we always called them aunt or uncle. And that's
right.
Just the way we grew up. That's just the way we grew up. And when I found my father's first cousin, Nicola, who's actually younger than me, in Italy, I was going back and forth between him and one of my other cousins who's there. And she kept saying, "He's not your cousin, he's your uncle." And I said, "No, he's my father's first cousin. He's my first cousin once removed." And she said, "No, he's your uncle." So finally, Nicola said to me, he said, "No," and he said, "Here," he said, "out of respect, we say you're the
right.
uncle." So, in essence, I'm your uncle.
Yeah. Well, we did that in our family too. In fact, even family. In fact, I told you about the couple from my ancestral town that lived next door. They were not related, but we called them aunt and uncle.
Yeah.
You called your parents good friends aunts and uncles, whether they were related or not. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all that's gone.
That's for sure.
All of that is totally gone. Well, listen, Angel, this has been absolutely fascinating. I had so much fun and got an education too. So I really appreciate you taking the time. And for anybody listening, the book is The Lady of the Wheel, and where can people find The Lady of the Wheel and your websites?
It's for sale on Amazon, so just Google The Lady of the Wheel by Angelo Coniglio, and you'll find it. And my I have a family website. It's conigliofamily.com, and I have pages and pages on Sicilian language, on doing research. Ancestry research, a whole variety of things. And I have a page on there for every, I told you I had 145 nephews and nieces. Each one of them has a page on my family website. Also, just as an aside, I don't know if you remember the American Football League. Can you see that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know where the camera is.
Yeah, I see it.
I'm a big AFL fan. And so I also have a website called rememberTheAFL.com. Check that out.
Oh, okay.
Too.
Yeah, yeah.
And send me some information on your foundling and on your illegitimate ancestor. I'd be glad to look at it.
I will. I will, definitely. Thanks.